Double Indemnity from 1944, a classic. This is one of the films that you always hear about, and like when people are talking about Hollywood becoming Hollywood, or like old movies, old classics, this is definitely one that comes up a lot in screenwriting books or filmmaking books, history of Hollywood books, and deserved. It's fun to
Yeah,
watch.
absolutely deserved. I mean, the noir aspects of it, it's always talked about in as like a seminal work of film noir. I've never seen it before, this time. So like
Actually did not know that. I didn't even really think of whether you had seen it or not. Maybe I assumed that you had, but I wasn't. I couldn't have. I didn't know.
Interesting. But yeah, I hadn't seen it before, so it really is interesting to like watch it, and it is like very early on in that film noir thing, and it sets a lot of those templates.
The femme fatale.
Yeah, the femme fatale, the like.
Yeah, she was one of the, you can see how she's like the quintessential, just lures them in.
Oh, for sure, and like has no emotion in her face at any point other than like deviousness. Like every now and again she'll give like a sly little smile,
Yeah.
but like she's very much it's a great performance. I mean, very much like a predator, you know what I mean?
Yeah. All manipulation, but she's not the only guilty party here, you know.
Not at all.
And we'll get into that, you know. But Neff wasn't, he wasn't like some great guy that she took down a dark path. He was ready to jump off a ledge.
Oh, for sure. If
Eager.
eager and willing, some would say.
Too much so. Like it didn't
So,
take much to get him to do something a little, you know, get him to do something dirty.
definitely. Question for you. I'm assuming you have seen it before?
I have, yeah.
Like a film
I'm not sure
school?
if it was, yeah, I think, I'm not sure if it was film school or just going through one of those lists, which are less important now, but you know, when I was really getting into film, it was the early mid 2000s. So the list of like 100 greatest films by Sights and Sounds or Library of Congress, those were like
AFI.
AFI lists. Those were lists like kind of meant something then, and they kind of don't in the same way now. Which
Yeah.
I guess maybe too many films have
Interesting.
been made since, and movies have changed, and you know, as you get farther from things, it's like fewer movies from the 40s, 50s, and 60s, 70s. You know, as you get further, they become less relevant.
Sure.
And you can watch them and appreciate like technique and story, but they maybe fall off. It's like if in 2000, 10 movies from 1950 were like, you got to see these. 2010, it's like six of those movies are like, you got to see these.
Right.
2020, it's like four of them, you know. And in 2050, it'll be like, these are the two main movies from 1950 you need to see, you know.
Right.
And if you do anything else, then that's just you. And it's beautiful. I think I like watching old movies at times. I can definitely get in the mood where like, I just want to see some old movies, but I know that's not for everybody. Nothing's for everybody.
For sure.
But they
It's
do
funny.
exist and you can.
Absolutely. It's funny. I was listening to just a podcast or something earlier this week with a literature professor, and he was talking about kind of similarly in like literature, like right after a certain time, the further you get away from a book, kind of the more specialized it becomes, because it's like
Yeah.
more unapproachable because it's not in step with the time, right? Like you said, it's not relevant. And I think hearing you say that, it's kind of similar with film, right? Like at a certain point, like this is a 1944 film. It's like cool to see all that stuff, but it's so different to today to be almost unrecognizable in some ways, right?
Yeah. And when you think about classic literature is great because you go back and it's like there are thousands of books written before any time, you know, there's like there's so many books was written, but if you're in almost any class, that's not like a upper level specific class, a niche class. If you're just like in a general class or even maybe intermediate class, it's like, okay, you're sort of in like Shakespeare, you're
Right.
studying Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, you're studying Those are just the two that came to mind right now, but
Those are
that's kind of
two
how
good
it is.
options.
You might get into some Sherlock Holmes. Like, these are the things
Right. Charles Dickens or something.
that become so ingrained that like every generation will study them. But other things are great too, but they're not general in the same way. They become more specific.
This is a thing that gives me an interesting question, right? Because I think about it's true definitely with literature, and I hadn't really applied it to film. But like I also think about like some of the things that weren't big at the time and then later became classic, right? Like a
I love
Dickens,
that.
right? Like Charles Dickens was considered to be like penny dreadful, like you bought one of his magazines for like a penny. You know what I mean? Like it was street. It was basically the literature of the street, like regular common people. It was looked down upon. But now you go to a, like you said, a level 600 literature class, and they're going to be teaching you Dickens.
Yeah, Dickens.
Or thinking about like even what's the guy who did The Great Gatsby? Like my man died poor.
Fitzgerald.
Yeah, Fitzgerald. My man died poor. The Great Gatsby was considered to be a flop and a not a good book. And again, you're in a 600 literature, American literature class. You're gonna read The Great Gatsby at some point. So it's interesting to think about like even like a 1944 or any of these older movies. Like, what were the movies that came out and might not have even might have been real popular, and then we don't know them anymore, or might have been bad and became classic. That's always an interesting question to me.
I think as we move to more niche everything content, it would be interesting if if different people took on different decades, right? And it was like somebody was like, I'm the 1940s guy. Here are the movies. Here's me just going through movies of 1940. And this one was great, and that one was great. This one is one we still talk about, but this one seems like it's just as good, and we don't talk about this one as like a central place to go. Because oh, speaking of movies, it did make me remember. It helped me remember, like, Casablanca was not a hit when it first came out. And
That's a
now it's like
great.
a classic. Like, everybody, Casablanca is one of the ones even probably higher on most lists than like Double Indemnity is. So,
Yeah, no, that's a great example of definitely one of those. It's always interesting.
yeah, it's crazy, like, how what becomes in a zeitgeist and what leaves it and then what re-enters, like, the song Fast Car. It was like huge that came out. It was important. But then nobody's talked about it for like 30 years. And then all of a sudden, the guy does a cover and everybody's like, oh yeah, this song is amazing. And then she's at the Grammys and everybody's like, oh, she killed it. She's amazing. And the song has its moment again 30 years later.
30 years later. Incredible. Incredible. Not to take this too far afield, but this is one thing that I always find interesting that it makes me think of it. It kind of makes me think of Vincent Van Gogh. Like, Vincent Van Gogh like was kind of just a mediocre painter with not big of a following. Again, died very poor. And it wasn't until like 1960 when the New York art world was like, no, actually, this was the guy. And now he's the
Really?
most recognizable artist in the world. You can always tell a Van Gogh. And so it's always interesting to see how, again, like Fast Car or any of these things, how like something can come, disappear even for like 80 to 100 years in the case of like Van Gogh, and then be like, oh, no, this is what we
I
should.
didn't even realize that about Van Gogh because I was just somewhere and like his visage was on a building because they were like promoting whatever exhibit or whatever it was, but I'm like, his face is everywhere now.
Exactly.
And for him to have for that to be the way, things ended for him, it's like, oh wait, what? It's kind of a mind twist. What I hope comes back is like 90s real like dance music, like CNC Music Factory,
For sure.
really like pumped up stuff that they play at like they used to play at sporting events, Pump up the jam,
Yeah,
pump,
poker.
stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. There's
Gonna make
one
you
I can't
sweat till
believe.
you bleed. Oh,
There's one of those like classic ones. I heard it on like a reel a couple months ago, and I was just like, man, this music needs to come back. Like, there was just a time in the 90s where you had like these kind of almost European house dance songs with
yeah.
like black female
With a
vocalists,
black female vocalist.
and they all snap, man.
It was a crazy time. Double indemnity has a meaning. It's a provision for payment of double the face amount of an insurance policy under certain conditions. The condition in this movie was the husband dies a certain way, and they could get double the payment. Instead of, I think it was 50K, they could get 100K, basically.
That's so interesting because I'm realize as you said that, I realized that I had always misunderstood that meaning. I confused it with something else. I'm realizing I always confused this with double jeopardy, where like you can't be convicted for a crime you've already been convicted for. Yeah, I never really realized that. I've always heard the name of this movie and just kind of assumed it was talking about that thing, not realizing that no, it's a different thing.
Most times when I hear about it, then I got to go look it up again. I can never quite hold it in my head. Double indemnity. I know what that means. I know what it means, but I can't ever remember it. So this movie, man. So a friend of mine recently was like, he was like, I kind of have a hard time reading fiction. He's like, sometimes it's like they're just describing things in the details and I get bogged down. He's like, what makes a good fiction book? And I was like, well, what they do is the ones I like that I read that hold me is like they hold attention. And what they do is, unlike a movie, is maybe even every chapter, it's like they switch the tension a little bit. Where like a movie kind of has to go straight, has to be a little predictable for to get a mass audience, and also like with the visuals, I think you just can't too many moving pieces. But with a book,
Right.
you can be like, okay, here's a setup, and then you give me a couple chapters unpacking the setup, and then they go, and then now they're here, and you're like, wait, what? And the best, I think, authors find a way to zig or zag. Rather than following like a simple, holding like one tension in the book. The book's, you'd be in the middle of the book and you're like, oh, we're kind of far from the original premise. Not so far that it's unrecognizable, but like now we're dealing with something I just didn't see coming,
That's interesting.
And this movie does it. And a lot of older movies like are way more literary in this sense.
Novelistic for sure, right? And it's like kind of pacing and like structure, definitely.
They were so, I mean, movies were new in 1944. Movies were still new.
Right.
So they, most movies were based off of some little, like you said, nickel novel, a dime
Right.
store paperback. Especially something like this. This is just like a dinosaur paperback story of intrigue and murder. Like it's not, it
Sure.
wasn't going up for, the Booker Award in writing or anything. It was just like somebody's little book.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely is like a dime store novel, right? On the spinny rack. With the old 1940s femme fatale holding the gun on the cover, like it's that sort of movie. But it's a great example of how execution wins every time. You know what I mean? Execution is the differentiator. You know what I mean?
And movies were also still so play-like.
Definitely. Even in the
And
acting.
a lot of times plays have a different kind of shock value too, when it's like a genre kind of thing like this. You keep really want to keep the audience on the edge of their seat and not kind of settle in, like maybe a family drama would, So this movie I found like really fun to watch because it just kept flipping and the characters were so like so fun. And I think that's also something that is kind of lost in movies today. Like the fun character is like, it's just that, like the way I said it, you get the fun character. And it's
Right.
like an actor, sometimes a chubby actor or somebody that doesn't have a different kind of body type, or it's the black guy in a white movie, or somebody that's kind of goofy and they just are acting goofy and everybody else is kind of like normal,
Yeah, the odd one out.
And it might even be in a drama and it's like, well, this is the fun character in a drama or something. And I'm like, that always kind of like turns me out of the movie. But this one, everybody's a little over the top, and nobody like stands out as being like, "Well, I'm gonna be the goofy one to keep it lip," you know.
Yeah.
But like Fred McMurray, who's Walter Neff, who's the main character, he comes in and you're like, "Oh, he's a straight guy," but he's so slick right
Yeah.
off the bat with the
Too slick
banter and
by
the
half.
dialogue. It's like, "My husband." He's like, "Oh, that tears it. Guess I'll go." Like their banter at the beginning.
Immediately. It's like you said
And then
earlier.
you,
Oh,
yeah.
go ahead. I was just gonna say, it's like you said earlier, you know, like he was primed to like get into some stuff, man. 'Cause like it's not like she fully just reeled him in. He was attempting from jump, right? Like
Okay,
that
yeah,
line. Like he was immediately like trying to
let's get into
know
this.
more
Let's get
about
into
this
this.
lady, you know? Yeah, so
Let's get into this right on top. Like he,
yeah.
this movie has some great shots, like right up top. Like
Yeah.
the intro is the man on crutches, the shadow, and it just comes closer and closer to the screen. Like that was just really fun to watch. And then Neff, the first scene is Neff goes into his office and he gets on a dictaphone and he starts relaying, and it's like we already know he's like down for the count. He's gonna tell us his story. It's like the end of the movie is first.
Right. Bring me
So
device, too.
he goes to the lady's house to sell insurance. Which I actually had to watch this a couple times. I was like, was he going there for another reason? Like something about it just seemed shady at the beginning. But no, he
Yeah.
was going there to sell, try to sell them some insurance. She comes out like half dressed.
Right.
She's the
Fuck
lady of the
off.
house. The maid is like, "Oh, he's not here." And then she comes out. And as soon as he sees her, he's like, "Hey."
Yeah, he was definitely ready.
So he was done, and he was done immediately.
Yeah, there's no way he was gonna make it out of that. You know what I mean?
She could have yelled from the banister where she was, like, "Do you want to kill my husband for insurance money?" He'd have been like,
Yeah,
"No way." Walked out and came right back in. "Actually, I'm in."
he did put up like he put up like a just enough of a what is it? Resistance to be, I guess, respectable from a plot standpoint. You know what I mean? Like he was ready to get into some crazy stuff.
It was cool because, okay, she comes out and she's kind of in a robe and like lingerie or whatever, or 1940s lingerie.
Sure.
Then the maid is, she's like, "He can stay," because the maid was trying to get him out because the husband wasn't home. Because she's thinking fast.
Yeah.
As soon as she sees him, she's like, "Oh, insurance man, huh? This could work out to my favor, my benefit. Kill my husband." She tells him to stay. She goes and changes and comes back. And they just start flirting heavy. And it's like back and forth, like
Super heavy.
the stereotypical like 1940s, 1950s man and woman banter. Like, "Hey, that's a nice
Super
shirt. You
snappy.
got a nice shirt." You know, just super, super snappy.
Yeah, right. One back and forth immediately. It was in this movie was very, in the best of ways, very stereotypical 1940s. You know what I mean? Like, you can keep going, but like just very much the voices, the cadences, the jokes.
If you're like a film person, this was co-written by Billy Wilder,
Okay, yeah.
who's one of the, you know, one of the more well-known historical filmmakers, especially kind of comedy,
Yeah.
like this kind of comedy and snappy dialogue and
We did The Apartment. That was one of his, and this is that
The
very,
Apartment.
I mean, it's like 16 years later that movie's made, but it's still very kind of snappy in a
Yeah. So he's done
weird
like
way.
Sunset Boulevard and Some Like It Hot with Marilyn Monroe, 7 Year Itch, The
Yeah.
Apartment, a bunch of films. So he's like,
Yeah.
this is his style.
Sunset Boulevard being my personal favorite of his. I love that movie.
This is his style. Like, so you're going to see a Billy Wilder movie. You're gonna get some snappy dialogue of man-woman flirtation and with something underneath that that's kind
It's a
of
little dark.
untoward, a little dark.
Yeah, a little dark.
And what I found funny, so they flirt, She's like, but I, you know, she brings up her husband a couple times, and Neff is like, well, okay then. He's like, I get the hint, but he never shows his facade never breaks. He's
Yeah, like
like,
he says he's gonna leave, but he's not leaving. He doesn't move.
then when he leaves, they do this great job with the voiceover where it's like, she had me. He admits it in the voiceover. He's like, I
Yeah.
tried to go about my day. I made it about to the next morning. And I knew I would do anything she asked. And what he mentions that really got me, he was like, the way that anklet, the way
Yeah,
that
like
bracelet hugged her
cut
ankle
into.
or something.
Cut into her ankle or something like that. I thought it was
Yeah.
an interesting way to say that.
It's so funny because that's what we make fun of for old
Yeah.
times. It's like, oh, women at the beach showing their ankles. Guys must have
Yeah.
loved that. And it
Yeah.
was in this script written in 1944, and it's like guys did love that, I guess.
Little
They were
skin,
checking those ankles out, man.
huh? My man
Oh
was
man.
down bad for sure.
Immediately, he could not stop thinking about her. And he read her really quick. He read her instantly. He
Oh,
said,
yeah.
he thought, you think you can just, oh, I see what you're trying to do, trying to set me up. I'm gonna help you get rid of your husband. No, I don't play that game. He left. Came back the next morning and was like, I do play that game. Yeah.
I think that's one of the interesting things about the two characters is that they're both very quick and they both read each other really fast, really well. You know what I mean? And there is that kind of quick, snappy banter, but it does a good job of showing off that both of these characters, like, he's not an idiot, right? Like,
Right.
he's not being manipulated to the point where he knows he's being manipulated, but like he admits himself, she had me, right?
Yeah.
And I think
And
that
he gets
needle kind
excited
of.
about the possibilities, you know, them getting this money and them running away together or something.
That anklet.
Those sexy ankles. Undefeated.
Every time.
And so it's like this movie's not lying to us. It's saying you came to see a film noir.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give you a bunch of backstory or waste a lot of time with these characters falling in this love that's going to lead to this tragic end. It's instant. It's an adrenaline thing, and you kind of either are with it, or if you can't get with it, you can leave.
Yeah, it's not love, it's lust, but done in a 1944 way.
So right there after the first scene, it's laid out. She's going to try to kill her husband for the insurance money. Not at the end of the first act, not somewhere in the midpoint or buried somewhere or with all this build up. They lay it all out. She married this guy. She's his second wife. He has a daughter. She's like, he loves the daughter more than me. And these are the problems in the marriage. And she needs to get out. And she's desperate. It's all laid out right there. And so is his desperation. And we don't never know his situation. He's just a single man who has this job and is eager. So he goes to work. And then this is my favorite character, his partner, played by Edward G. Robinson, Keys.
Keys.
And I texted you because Keys is a striking man visually.
For
And we got to
sure.
get more of him.
Edward
We
G.
got to get.
Robinson, not necessarily a looker.
We gotta get the ugly people back in the film
We
and TV.
absolutely like, and I think it's interesting because Edward G. Robinson was such a star,
He was a
right?
huge
Like
star.
huge star, whether it's leading films or definitely a huge co-star, right? He's in so much. And yeah, you just don't really get that these days. Every now and again you get like a Paul Giamatti, but even like that is, I mean, Paul Giamatti's been around for 30 years at this point. Like, who's the next one? You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
who's the next one? It's not, I'm not really passing judgment of people being ugly, but just not striking,
Yeah,
you know, great looking, like super good looking. It's more
like the, not a
of a
model looking.
commentary of how good so many people look. It's like we're like regular looking people or odd looking people. People that I might see in real life in the movies, and not everybody is super well coiffed with veneers and six packs and stuff, you know.
Right, exactly. Super slim cut jawline or something like that, right? Like who might be on the street, to your point.
Edward G. Robinson, for example, played a lot of gangster tough guy roles. Not even the gangster tough guy roles have got to be like pretty boy style, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Good looking, dark, smoldering dudes. It's like one of these guys got to be kind of rough looking. Somebody.
Right. They've been in a fight, right? You know what I mean? Absolutely.
Interesting to think of movies just like erased ugliness from the conversation.
The interesting thing about this movie, and like, I don't want to be one of those people who's like, yeah, everything was great, better back in the day and all that stuff, but like, it
Right.
is really interesting because like, movies have always been big business. They were big business in 1944, right? Like, and they were always made for profit, right? But there's something about a 2025 movie, that for the most part is such a, it's such a product. You know what I mean? Like, you're gonna have all your beautiful model looking people. You're gonna have very kind of predictable tropes and things like that. Usually it's gonna be part of something that already exists, right? A franchise or something like that. They're such products, and this is not a product in that same way.
Like, oh man, I just had a like I thought about this before, where there's always been formulas for movies, even back in 1944. They had
Absolutely.
formulas. But the thing that the movie industry used to really have, that it can be hard to feel like you can find it now, is risk takers. Like people were eager to find new ways to shake up the system, or to take a risk, or even do something indecent that might make people blush, you know. But a lot of that is just like not on the table now, you know. Like vulgarity has become the norm in a lot of, in a certain sense, and that's maybe a bigger conversation. But also, everybody is like just adhering to the formulas now. Like, oh, this is what works. Everybody just wants to do what works. Nobody wants to be like, that can't be the only thing that works, or I'm gonna, you know, subvert that in a way that isn't typical. It's just everybody's like,
Yeah,
just do
that's
what works, just do what works, just do what works. This is a formula, just do what works.
right. Anything outside of the formula represents risk, right?
And
You
yeah,
know what I
there
mean?
aren't. This isn't the industry of risk takers anymore, for
For
sure.
sure. I think, there's something you said about that the movie doesn't lie to us. And it's something I noticed while watching this movie. Certainly noticed it during The Apartment, Stalag 17, another Billy Wilder movie I've seen, and certainly, like I said, Sunset Boulevard, a huge fan of. But what I love about his movies is that, like, even though it takes place in this time period where so much is censored, it doesn't lie to you about the world. Like, bad things are happening. People are making poor decisions, right? Like you said, it might be a little untoward. It might be something that makes you blush or a little bit embarrassed. You know what I mean? Like The Apartment, they're dealing with some stuff, right? Like this one, they're clearly dealing with some stuff. There's a lot of stuff going on in something like Sunset Boulevard, like as far as the guy like really being a kept man and what is he doing for the, you know, like they really kind of don't expose the underbelly, but they show you that it's there. And it's really interesting how it's handled.
Yeah. So they enter into this pact. They're going to try to kill her husband. And Neff is an insurance man. So the idea is that he can crack the system. But they did a good job establishing that his partner is like the best. He'll uncover any fraud. You can't get it past him. So Neff is like being super careful. And it was also interesting when they're in LA and I know where they're going. They're like, this is in Los Feliz. She's on Western and Vermont, or Western and Vermont and what was it? Anyway, I know what that
Yeah.
was. which was just interesting to watch it from that perspective. I'm like, I used to live over there.
Yeah, that's actually, I had a similar thought while watching the opening, right? When he goes to our house. And you know, it's a street shot as he's driving up the street. And it really is interesting. I mean, this movie's a great example, but you know, it's interesting, you know, they've been making movies for like 130 years now, and you really can just jump in at any time and get a chance to see what LA looked like at the time.
Yeah.
You know?
LA and New York are really
Yeah.
like, you can watch the change of these cities through movies. Chicago, a little less so, but it has quite a bit of
Still
Chicago
there,
stuff
probably,
there,
right?
here and there. So Neff plans it, and all the characters, like, so he plans it, and then they get to the train, and they did a great job with the tension here, where every move he makes, there's like just a little hiccup. Even when they get in the car after they've done it, like the car won't start.
Right.
Oh no, but then he gets it to start and you're like, oh, okay, that's not where they're gonna get caught. They're gonna get caught somewhere else. You kind of get the feeling they're gonna get caught.
It does do a great job, right? Because like you're saying, there's always a hiccup, and every single one of those hiccups like represents a place where they could get caught, and it's kind of like foreshadowing, right? That fact that you know that they will.
So I'm looking at this movie, well, we're looking at this movie and now, and thinking, what is this movie saying about America at a time? Well, I think that what I take from it is there were accepted codes of conduct, and even the anklet thing. It's clear that she is being a temptress in a way, and that seeing her in her robe and lingerie is taboo. That's not something a random man is supposed to see. That's clear in the movie.
Right.
Even though it's only one scene that she's like that, but it's clear. It's clear that there's a lot of just rules in society.
For sure.
It's also clear that, you know, a black person is going to be a servant,
Yep,
a
definitely.
janitor, a janitor, a
Yeah, I
porter,
think, yeah,
I think one of the train guys.
you see two black actors, I think, in this movie. One's a porter and one's like the clerk in his garage or something like that.
Right.
You know? Yeah, no, that's a great point, right? Like even like you said earlier, the part where the housemaid tries to like send Fred McMurray away, right? Because the husband's not there. Like even that's one of those rules, right? No, male visitors when the husband's not around. You know what I mean? It really does a good move or a good job, especially as going back and watching it as a, you know, a 80-year-old movie at this point, of like showing you the unspoken rules of the day and how kind of these characters chafe at them. You know what I mean? Like, each one of these rules is something. These characters break every single one of these rules that's placed in front of them at some point in the movie, and they're
Yeah.
unspoken.
I just see this on the Wikipedia. Wilder chose a bad wig for Stanwyck to underscore Phyllis's sleazy phoniness.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Like, that speaks to just what we're saying. That her appearance even was. I mean, and she does look different when they're in the supermarket. She stands out from all the other ladies. It's clear that her style, her presentation is dangerous.
Yeah, dangerous, unique, eye-catching.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It also show, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. It also shows.
Like, it shows a very bureaucratic society also. Like, when you are doing like film studies, you start probably with American films, and then you go to the great films that are on these lists that are from other countries, like the Sanjit Ray from India, his films, or you go to Kurosawa, which, but a lot of like the modern Kurosawa that's not set in like feudal Japan is also like very bureaucratic society.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
And you get that, you understand that here with how serious the insurance companies take like these claims. Like, why are they investigating so hard? You know, it's just they have other cases. Why is this one, you know, but they will not stand for fraud, you know.
In that way, it was really interesting because, like you said, Edward G. Robinson plays so many like gangsters and thugs throughout his career, right? It was really interesting to see him to be like the stalwart upholder of justice, right? He just couldn't let it go, you know what I mean?
He couldn't let it go, and everything has rules. That's why he has to be so careful to cover it. And I guess what I was saying with the other cultures is like sometimes when you watch movie from other cultures from these same times, it's less staunchly bureaucratic. You know, like the stories aren't the same. And in that sense, it makes it hard to compare, but the stories aren't the same because this doesn't exist maybe in another country in the same way. You know, like you could maybe murder somebody and get away with it, but maybe you also don't get an insurance payment because everybody doesn't have to have insurance. It's not. And the way he has to keep track of everything speaks to a society that's kind of, that we're even dealing with now, but that's there's always a surveillance. Everybody's always clocking everything because in case they get questioned, or you know, you can't. Where even in other parts that are like maybe a black film from this time, you wouldn't feel like, oh, everybody that sees you is going to tell on you, you know? And
It is
that
interesting.
comes true in this one. Like when he gets back from the train, they find the guy and he's like, that wasn't the guy I saw on the train, the guy that died. It was a guy that was taller and younger. You look back at like, oh, was it? It was Neff then, you know. Like everybody wants to be, and we still, this is still America. Everybody wants to be the one to tell the story or something.
Yeah, that's super interesting. That's super interesting. I think, as far as kind of what this says about America at the time, I think everything you've said is really on point. One thing that I found interesting was, it's a small cast. I think there's maybe 10 actors, 10 main roles, right? 10 or 11. It's a couple of uncredited roles. But even with that, like it's almost intentionally kind of diverse in a certain sort of sense. Like, and there many of them are white actors, but like, you look at the character names, like one of them is Zacchetti, right? The lady, the Barbara Stanwyck's character, Dietrichson, Keys and Neff, another person they work with, I think it was Schwartz or Schwartzman or something like that. You know what I mean? Then also the two black actors that are in it, and they are servants. But again, that was another one that I felt like the movie wasn't lying, because there are other movies from the same time period where that garage clerk would have been a white actor. But that would not have been what you saw when you went to the garage of your apartment. You would have had a black man there. Or that porter would
Or
have been a white actor. You know what I mean?
they wouldn't show it.
Or the,
He
yeah,
would
or the
say it. He was like, I walked past the janitor. He's a good, you know, and they just wouldn't cast anybody, and they would have just shot it a different way so you didn't have to see that person. That's
Right, exactly. Right. So that, I mean, even that is a great point, right? So you wouldn't have to see him. It's almost like you know what's there, but we don't need to show you that. Whereas I feel like this movie does at least show you that. And I appreciate that neither one of those black characters is like, yes, sir, boss, or that stuff. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
they
Like,
were actually like regular people. Like, okay,
yeah, just
yeah,
regular people.
good to see you. You know, they weren't shucking
Yeah.
and jiving at all. Yeah, small parts, but you know, important in a lot of ways to have that in these films at this time. I mean, 1944, it's World War II. We didn't even, it wasn't even Civil Rights Act. It wasn't, you know.
Right. You know, especially like you think about the porters, right? Like being a porter on a train was a job for a lot of black men. Like a lot of that, the porters union was kind of like well known to be largely black. And the fact that the train hub, like the central hub of trains, was mostly usually in Chicago, I mean, it re trains themselves really contributed to the growth of the black community in Chicago. You know what I mean? Because people would get a job on a chain. It's like being a flight steward for Delta. You're going to live in Atlanta because it makes sense. You know what I mean? So I really appreciated that just from an actual picture of what the society would have looked like. You would have seen black people in that train.
Yeah, from thinking about it within the historical perspective that it exists.
Right.
And not asking for this movie to have more bigger black roles. You know, this movie was fine the way it was for the time that it was.
For the time that it was, yeah.
And they just do a great job. A lot of times movies, it's hard to do interiority, like what somebody's going through on the inside. This one used voiceover to strong effect to clue us in on how he was unraveling as he's narrating it, you know, kind of like you know, Goodfellas did this too, you know, some 50 years later. But he's just telling us, just like he did earlier, he was and earlier he told us how he was head over heels for her. Later he tells us how he's kind of falling apart. He's always sweating as it goes along. There's a point where they think they got away with it. She calls him. I'm gonna come over. He's like, come on over, baby. Do you know how they talk?
Fred McMurray, what a great, he's just a, such a great delivery all the time. Come on over, baby.
As soon as he gets off the phone, Keys comes over. And she's on the way. And he, his movements kind of, his movements as an actor, his movements just slow, where he's like, oh, he opens the door. Keys comes in, he stands by the door. Then she shows up, but she hears them talking, so she doesn't come in. Then Keys leaves, and she hides behind the open door. She touches his hand so that he knows she's there. And he opens the door just a little more so she can hide a little better and just stands there. Keys goes towards like the stairs. Turns back around to say a few more things. Like, I'm just not sure about this case. Something is in my gut. I've got to figure it out. Finally, Keys leaves and he rushes her in the apartment. That's such a, it was such a great, like, 3 minute scene to tease us that they're going to get caught and to keep the tension up and to show us how he is not as in control as he thought he was. By a long shot.
Like I said in the beginning, like he's definitely like too slick by half, right? Like he kind of believes in his own slickness, but
So, man, that really makes me think of this movie is kind of tearing down a certain white male fantasy. And I think this is kind of what Wilder does. He tears down what people think makes him so great, basically. This guy has a job. He's successful in life. Swinging bachelor. He can figure anything out. But he can't. He can't. You can't do everything. You can't live the double life. It just doesn't, it doesn't work. That's not, that's not, it's not a good person to be. And when you try that, it's gonna crumble. So I think in a way, that's what this movie is kind of saying about the society at the time. And it's also in a way of holding up the status quo. Maybe that wasn't his intention, but it's one of those things where, oh, it would be better if you guys just did what you were supposed to do.
For sure. It's interesting to think about this movie and those messages in regards to like World War II actively happening.
Right.
You know what I mean? So like these ideas of American masculinity and American soldiers, our boys going over to fight, you know, the Germans and all that sort of stuff. It really is interesting to have this movie come out with a guy like Fred McMurray, who's like tall, broad-shouldered, good-looking dude. Like he's like kind of classic American man. You know what I mean? And yet he is both, and I use this in the most gentle of terms, but he is both domineered by this woman. In the case of the times, right? 1944, he's being domineered by this woman. And he's
Right,
also
right.
like, and he's also like kind of failing to come through as a man in a certain sense. It's, I
Yeah,
wouldn't have
he's
thought
not
about this until
delivering.
you just, you know.
He's really not delivering as a man. I think that's clear in the movie that even that's how he feels. They never say that, but he's like, he really tries to control the situation. And she's like, oh, this will be fine and we can do this. And there's one time he's giving her the instructions and she's like, you already told me that. Like I got it.
Yeah.
He's kind of falling apart at the seams. For her, it's interesting because she's really a sympathetic villain by the time you get to the end of the movie. But she also is really a villain by the time you get to the end of the movie
Right. She's like
because,
trying to kill four people.
yeah, she's been doing it. But you also, I got the feeling at least that like this was a girl that didn't have a lot of options in life. And that's how she ended up in some of these situations. And then when she did, the way out for her was mur was often was often murder. Apparently, she might have killed his first wife because she was her nurse, and that's what the daughter says. She's like, she had this look. I just know she did.
I'm sure she did. I saw the look in the movie a number of times.
Yeah, she because she brought the look out, and then she shoots Neff at the end. She shoots him, but it doesn't kill him. He's like, "Why don't you pull the trigger again?" And she's like, "I can't." And she says, "He's like, it was all fake. You never cared about me." And she's like, "You're right. I didn't until just now when I couldn't pull the trigger a second time." Was like,
Great.
"That's old Hollywood romance. That's what like L.A. is built on." Is just somebody like admitting that at a certain point, something crazy like that.
Just an incredible line.
And it's like the soft lighting on her face, and she's looking up at him, and she's like, I didn't love you. It was all fake until now. Like the music is swelling.
The gauzy like, yeah, soft
Like,
focus.
that's filmmaking, man. That is filmmaking. I don't know what we're doing now. That is filmmaking. Then he shoots her, so then she dies. They had no other option at this point, and he had completely lost it because a girlfriend's boyfriend apparently was seeing Phyllis also. So he was like, "Oh, now you're cheating on me. We're gonna run away together." This wasn't love. He was just so like distraught. Everything he thought, everything he believed about himself and life just exploded in one moment when he found out the young boyfriend was also seeing her. Because it made the whole plan, he already knew that was falling apart. He felt bad about the daughter. And he was trying to be sympathetic to her as much as he could, given what he was doing. He felt bad about betraying his partner. He had nothing else in his life. He was a single dude in a single apartment. He just thought he had at least the love of this woman. And then he was like, I don't even have that. I don't even have that.
It was like the one thing that he was like seeing him through.
The one thing.
The one thing that was holding him. I think I find it very interesting. I'm thinking about what you were talking about a couple weeks ago about like I think it was during the old school episode where you're talking about like family values, right? And it makes me think like this movie, and I think like a lot of other Billy Wilder movies are really interesting because, you know, I'm a middle-aged single man, you know what I mean? No children. And that is often like just a dangerous place for a character to be in a like a Billy Wilder movie, right? Like they're
Yeah.
like all like, late 30s, early 40s, single men who are like desperate and ready to do something crazy, you know what I mean? So the kind of there's kind of like a family values message I feel like on the back end of it, but at the same time, he also shows numerous times Fred McMurray's character in The Apartment, the Barbara Stanwyck character in this, a number of other movies. Like he also shows that like marriage is often not all it's cracked up to be either. So it's a there's some double messaging that's really interesting.
Right. It's kind of like this is the status quo and you should uphold the status quo, but the status quo kind of sucks.
Yeah. Yeah,
And
that's kind of the message.
even like the lady at the grocery stores, they don't seem happy. The one lady's like, they always put what I want on shelf too high. And it's like, that's well, somebody got it for you. There's somebody here to get that for you. It's not really a big deal to be
Right.
complaining about. The other lady's like, excuse me, when she goes to grab her thing. It's like, nobody's really happy in this movie, you know?
Yeah, everybody's
Except maybe
justifiably got a
Keys.
complaint almost, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Except maybe Keys. But even he's not married. We don't hear any mention of
True.
his family
He's just
life
got like
either.
purpose. Keys has
Yeah.
purpose.
Keys has purpose, yeah.
Keys has purpose. That's interesting.
And the other guy, whatever his name was, I can't remember his name, but the other guy that they have to present the insurance claim to as well. Like these guys just have a job. They just have jobs. And
Right.
they're committed to doing those jobs well.
Yeah, there's something about purposelessness, maybe.
Yeah. Because Neff just has a job.
Right. He's just doing it.
Yeah, he doesn't feel like he loves insurance the way these guys do, or even
Right.
loves the investigation or anything. Because they offer him a promotion, and he's like,
Yeah, I forgot about that.
he doesn't take it. And the guy's like, well, you know, this is actually like more money, and you get to do all these claims. It's pretty great. And he's like, nah, I'd rather be like knocking on doors and talking to people because the actual insurance part sucks to him. And obviously, Robert Stanwyck's character has no purpose in life. Especially now, she's not even anybody. She was at least the wife's nurse before. Now she's just a housewife. And they have a maid, so she's not doing any housewife stuff. She's just lounging around all day, bitter, in a home
Thinking
that
about
feels like a
killing.
prison, planning her next murder.
Next murder. Yeah, it's really it's with her. I feel like it's almost like the purpose is just whatever the next, whatever the next move is. You know what I mean? Whatever
Yeah.
the next thing she can pull over somebody's eyes to get her to wherever she thinks she needs to be. It's interesting that, they kind of don't really go into that. Like wherever she thinks she needs to be, it's.
Yeah, like what is her actual dream? What kind of life would she want to live?
Yeah, kind of fascinating.
It's not really important in a film noir, you know, it's just this is what her goal is here.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. I appreciate that there's a spareness, you were kind of talking about earlier.
Right. We've been talking about this movie for an hour and we watched it and we just now are asking about it. It's not even, you know what I mean? It's not like something we missed. We just kind of let ourselves hear through a long conversation about it.
Right. So what was your what's your favorite part of this movie?
Good question. Favorite
Good.
part of this movie?
And maybe it's not the right question, but yeah.
I guess I just like how it unravels at the end, and how Keyes is like not quite figuring it out because he likes Neff too much. And when that final scene, I feel like maybe it's like the final scene, but I like the bookend scenes with McMurray and Stanley. The first one where they're flirting so hard, but they don't know each other, they can't break the rules yet any more than this witty banner. And then the last one where they both admit they love each other as they're literally shooting each other.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little That's a little messed up. Yeah.
You?
I was, I love the snappiness. Like
Right.
it's not one thing, but it was consistent throughout. But yeah, the snappiness of the dialogue, it's almost like getting into parody territory at this point, right? In 2025, to be
Yeah.
watching Edward G. Robinson talk like this, you know what I mean? Da, da, da. Like it's kind of funny. But also it becomes really easy to appreciate the script. There's something about the way these actors deliver those lines that snap. It really, I you can just see that dialogue, not necessarily falling short. There's some great lines in there, but you can really see that dialogue falling short if it wasn't quite performed in that snappy manner. You know what I mean? So,
It would be hard to duplicate today and
yeah.
feel real, feel
I felt like
honest.
if you were going to do this would be like a period piece. Like if you're going to shoot it today, you'd probably still need to shoot it in 44. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this would be hard to adapt, I think.
Oh yeah. Actually, that makes me think of something that I forgot to mention. You really would have to almost make it a period piece because in 2025, they're not getting away with that murder. They would have got caught by 57 cameras before the 20 minutes was up. You know what I
Yeah,
mean? Like,
you have to rethink the whole insurance scam. You have to
you have
rethink
to
it
think the
completely.
whole thing. Can't have text messages, can't have any of that stuff. You really almost have to, like, it becomes a different crime in the
That would be the
modern day.
challenge, yeah, because you get on a train. You don't go to the back car and ask for a cigar. Like, none of that didn't even make sense.
Yeah, when they were dumping the body on the train tracks, I was just, that's the part was they were like wide open, right? And I get it, it's a movie, right? But at the same time, like, I feel like that was possible in 1944. If there's nobody around,
Yeah,
no face, no case. You know what I mean?
that was something I thought about a lot in this movie because the way they were thinking around, I'm like, oh yeah, nobody's like just watching them. Like you have to imagine everybody else is just going on their business and like when he arrived somewhere and she was there in the car. It's like, yeah, nobody saw that car drive up. And like in LA, somebody would have seen it now for sure. They're like, oh yeah, I saw that lady driving up here. What are you talking about?
Right.
And they
Also always another interesting thing about seeing those kind of older versions of LA, and you can see like it's not nearly as populated as it is now, you know?
Yeah. Or like they're in a grocery store and people are just like not paying them attention, but they're acting so suspicious. Like
Yeah.
they're talking over the counter, they're talking over the aisles and things. It's one worker would have seen that, and they've been like, I don't know, somehow the insurance guy would have went to the grocery store and somebody would have been like, yeah, I actually seen this guy, tall guy, talking to this lady in glasses.
Right.
And they go to that store all the time, so somebody knows their name. It's like, yeah, Phyllis, she's always in here, but she'll never buy nothing.
Right. I think I got some footage in
Yeah,
the
definitely got that footage in the back. Let me pull up the camera.
Yeah. Interesting. I was just looking here on Wikipedia, the black actor who played the garage attendant, Sam McDaniel. He's the older brother of Hattie McDaniel, who won the Academy Award
Oh.
for Gone with the Wind. Pretty interesting.
Super interesting, fascinating.
And the only ever black actor to appear on I Love Lucy. Interesting. Incredible. Sam McDaniel.
Unbelievable. Wow.
Is.
To fashion a career as a character actor as a black man in 30s and
Yeah.
40s.
There's a
Remarkable.
remarkable. There's an old the Jack Benny show, old like radio and TV show. Still holds up somewhat.
Sure.
But there's definitely still some funny jokes in there. But like there's a black character, Rochester, who's like his kind of like garage attendant or whatever. And like just thinking about that actor, that character, like man, incredible to think about becoming even a famous character actor in a world where people almost intentionally don't know your name.
Right.
You know what I mean? Incredible. Is this, well, I was going to ask about black casting. Is this something that you wanted to black cast, but I don't know if you really know.
Oh no, this would be a fun one to black cast. If
Okay.
you're like gonna remake this movie of a period piece, yeah.
Yeah.
You can get deep with this. Who you got?
That's an interesting question. So Neff, right? Start off with Neff. I think I want Sterling. I think I want Sterling Brown for Neff.
Oh wow. Okay. You know, I thought about Idris, but it's always Idris.
It's always Idris for sure.
Really like my man, Aldis Hodge. I'm just gonna keep it Aldis because he's tall. He's taller. Neff is
Alex.
like kind of stands out as tall in this movie.
Yeah, recently was watching his Alex Cross show. Not perfect, but pretty good, and definitely modern noir. And so, yeah, I think Aldis would be great.
He's slick, and he could definitely put up that facade. Now the next two roles are the real prize.
Okay.
Stanwyck and Keyes. Those are the
All right.
ones you really gotta nail.
Yeah, that's tough. Stanwyck, that's tough. I don't know if I'm gonna nail it with this, but it's who I just thought of, so I'm gonna go for it. Zoe Kravitz. Zoe Kravitz.
It's tough because like actresses and ages, and a lot of times I'll think of names and it's like, oh, she's actually like 50, and not trying to knock anybody that's 50, obviously, but
Course.
sometimes you want to cast younger.
We've talked about it before. There's a real, in that crossover era, there's a real 2000s gap of a missing generation of new black actors who never really,
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
didn't get the shot that they deserved.
Didn't get the shot. And there's like a missing age group of like big name black actors.
Yeah, they didn't. They just didn't. The careers didn't weren't allowed to progress like they should have. But I'm gonna go ahead and go. I'm gonna keep it light, keep it bright. I'm
Okay.
gonna go Tessa Thompson.
Love Tessa. Tessa's the best.
Yeah, no, she's super talented.
Tessa would be really good at this, actually. I think Zoe would be too, but yeah, I think Tessa would kill something like this. Keys.
Jesus, tough.
Keys is tough. Keys is real tough.
Can do female too.
Yeah, that's fair. That's really fair.
Nobody that's gonna look like him, though.
No, there's definitely nobody who's gonna look like him. You know what? Why am I blanking on her name? Let me do a quick look up. Why is this not working? She was the black cop on Reno, the black female cop on Reno 911.
Niecy.
Niecy, why I couldn't think of her name to save my
Niecy
life.
Nash. Yeah.
Niecy Nash. Definitely.
I'm gonna go with Cat Williams. It
Okay.
have to be a little toned down, like I'm and we know he can do it. He did it. He was like on Atlanta, he can do it.
Sure. Definitely have that
Just
fast
like
talking sort
that
of.
fast talking, and he has to be like this real straight edge guy. It's like because this was different from the roles Edward G. Robinson usually played, I was trying to think of who would this be different for now?
I mean, I think that's the top three.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. Or I mean, we could do other, if you wanted to, but that's definitely like that's the main cast.
I was also thinking about another thing we haven't really done in a long time, Black Movie of the Week. I'd say it's
Oh yeah, I actually forgot about that whole bit.
I was thinking about these over the last week. But I think I gotta be basic and say Devil in a Blue Dress.
Right, yeah, that's what I figured.
It's gotta be.
It's sad because it's like it's just so little black noir, you know.
Yeah,
It's
definitely
either
should
like
be.
that or you got to look at some Sydney 48 movies, you know. Or you could go like Blaxploitation even, but
Yeah, that's true. I mean, in certain ways, I mean, we did Shaft, and in certain ways, Shaft is kind of noirish, just with a 70s like vibe.
Yeah. But yeah, Devil in a Blue Dress. And you know, if you want to see black films, you just see that anyway. And it's the
Yeah.
only time we got Prime Denzel and Prime Cheeto together too, which is a crime, but
It's a travesty, the fact that they didn't have another movie together or even a sequel to that, since there are so many of those Easy Rollins books.
and those are both guys that like can sell or help sell or like are top names for movies.
Yeah.
They should have had something else together at some time. And it's you know, we talked about Denzel a little bit in Gladiator, but he'd do a movie with black people and people like it, and then they don't get another chance. Like him and Forrest were in Great Debaters. Great Debaters was a
Oh,
lot of
yeah.
fun.
A lot of fun for sure.
But we only get that once, and it's like, I want to see Denzel jousting with, you know, I still want to let's get Denzel and Will in a movie together. We want to see that, you know,
Absolutely. I'm still, I don't know if
before
we've
it's too
talked
late,
about.
you know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Definitely want to see Will and Denzel in a movie. I think we've maybe, I don't know if we've ever talked about this on the pod before. I know we've talked about it in person, or over the phone or whatever, but I think I'd still love to see that Cheadle and Denz like
Yeah, they
sequel,
need to.
because the Easy Rollins books, they continue into like him being like 60, 70 years old, right? Like there's like 20 of those books. So like maybe one of the later ones, I'd love to see that.
I mean, I'd pay the ticket, you know.
I'd pay the ticket, absolutely, yeah.
And or if they did something else together, like
Yeah.
just put our folks together.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Put our folks together. That's it.
Niecy
It's
Nash
not
is.
asking too much.
Interesting.
All the black folks should be trying to plan to do movies with other stars right now. Male and female, whoever it is. Should just be like, yo, why don't we just do stuff together? Oh,
Yeah.
we got to kind of rebuild black cinema anyway. So it's like everybody should, they're like, Denzel might be in Black Panther 3. It's good. Yeah, he should
Yeah,
be.
he
Great.
should be,
Great.
right? Yeah, absolutely.
And like his second in command, whatever his role is, I don't know. He's gonna be a leader. He's got to be like,
Yeah.
but whoever his team is, it should be like his son. He could be in it, and I don't know, Taraji. I don't know. Just throw a name out there. Who's? I
Yeah.
mean, if Black
Especially.
Panther is the place that we're starting with this like get together of black people, which you know it definitely is in a lot of ways, like put them all in there. Then
Yeah,
get BS
especially
in.
the first movie, right? Like Forrest is in that, Sterling's in it.
Right?
You know what I mean? Like even the
Yeah, a bunch
smaller
of folks
roles
in
have
it. Yeah. So,
my man
you
who
know.
plays his father, that African actor, John, I can never remember his last name, but great actor. But yeah, no, I'd love to see Denzel in that. And I do think you're correct. I just want to see more of those movies. Did you re did, have you seen the latest of the Denzel August Wilson movies? The Piano Lessons?
No, I canceled my Netflix. We're way off. You want to end the pod or just
Yeah,
still
might as
relevant,
well.
pod relevant?
Might as
All
well.
right.